Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christian Corley, and I am the editor of Casterbrus.com, the Doctor Who news, reviews, and online magazine type of website thingamabob. And I'm also your host for today's Casterbrus podcast with a K, along with James McLean and Brian Terranova.
Hello.
That was nice, wasn't it?
That was good. Yeah. Yeah, you're getting good at this.
Yeah.
Sounded, practice makes perfect.
Almost professional. How long have you been doing the podcast now, Brian? 2007?
Too long.
Yeah.
Or not long enough.
We had to kind of peak at some level of quality at some point.
That is so true.
Yes. Although, of course, that kind of derides the quality that a seasoned podcaster like James McLean brings to the podcast.
I'm scared to speak with the connection issues.
Oh, don't worry about the connection. Connection's connection. Or something like that. So we're here to discuss Dark Water, the penultimate episode of Doctor Who Series 8, in which the Doctor and Clara discover that people are being... This is, and I have two problems with this episode, really. And overall, I thought it was a very good episode of Doctor Who. And it's definitely rewatchable. I've rewatched several elements of it a couple of times. But I wasn't entirely clear what the point of deleting someone's emotions, or rather, someone dying, their consciousness being uploaded to the Gallifreyan matrix slice, and then self-deleting their emotions. And then, what did they then get downloaded into the Cybermen? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
I suppose instead of a conversion process, it's although there's organics in there because they had organic skeletons.
Or are they? Is that what they're doing? Are they digging up skeletons, building armor around them, and then dropping consciousness into them? Downloading the consciousnesses into them. Is that what's happening? Do we think?
Good James?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I didn't think it was very well explained.
No.
No, not yet at least.
No.
I think too the one thing is that it's part one.
Yes.
You know, maybe next week we can really delve into if these things are issues, but yeah, it definitely wasn't explained yet.
Okay, so that's kind of what was going on, and of course you've got that excellent atmospheric scenario at the beginning, which was possibly, although very well executed, possibly wasn't really needed, the Clara dream sequence.
No, it was quite effective though, wasn't it?
It was very effective, yeah, and it was enjoyable, but in the overall look at it, did they really need to do that? Couldn't they have just, you know, landed in London, discovered that Danny Pink had been run over, and decided to do something about it? And then you get an extra 10 minutes of screen time.
I would say the sequence between Clara and Danny was less needed.
Right.
I know it obviously affirmed why she was so, you know, that she was in love with him, so that's why she was so upset. But it's a very long sequence for her to keep saying the same thing over and over again, really.
Yeah.
That didn't really... I thought it was going to build up to something that she was going to say to him. So unless, again, that is picked up in the next part. Because she was almost like she was on the verge of saying something. And then...
Yes. Well, there's...
You're talking
about notes, isn't there? There's, did you spot the post-it notes that she'd written notes on the wall? And one of those said 3 months. Mm. All the other ones were referring to adventures apart from that 3 months. which might have been something to do with reproduction. Possibly.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I liked that opening scene. I mean, maybe it went on a little bit too long, but I think the impact of her having a conversation with Danny and then all of a sudden somebody else gets on the phone to tell you this horrible thing has happened, rather than us find out about it after she arrives home on a trip with a doctor, which equally would be impactful because, you know, she arrives home to find out that she'd completely missed this event altogether. But I liked the thought of that because it was, I mean, put yourself in her shoes there. You're talking to your loved one, and then the next thing you know, somebody picks up the phone and tells you what happened to them. I mean, you were just talking to them. So I found it quite a strong moment, to be honest.
Oh, it was certainly well executed, yeah. I just wondered whether you get more Cybermen. The thing is, it's the Cybermen, isn't it? I think there are two elements of this episode that are disappointing me. We'll come to the obvious one later. The Cybermen are present throughout. We've got the little emblems. We've got the windows and the doors and the little teardrop, all that sort of thing. We've got them sat there in the tanks and in the dark water. Very clever idea. The reveal is a clever idea. It's so well done. But then we've got the dual problem that they don't appear to have a leader, so they're being apparently in league with the Master. Missy, beg your pardon. And they're just what they're just soldiers, aren't they? They're just stormtroopers. They're not the Cybermen. They're less well executed as Cybermen than David Banks' lot, basically. They're just drones that go off and that march and stomp around and kill people. They're not Cybermen. They've lost all interest as a villain.
Do you mean in the new series completely?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Okay. Especially in that episode, the most recent episode in Dark Water. I'm very disappointed. I wanted... If I'm watching a Doctor Who story and the Cybermen in it, then there is a leader of some sort, and there is a hierarchy. Now, this might be, you know, pointless in so far as the Cybermen themselves, but there is some idea of them having a, you know, a leader. In 2006, they had the Cyber Lead and the Cyber Controller in the two stories, and they worked far better. And I think that is the best story that they've had since Doctor Who returned, or the best pair of stories that season. They could have been anyone, couldn't they? Really?
Well, it's something they've got to explain is why there was a necessity for them to have to go through this, you know, to take... They already can convert people without emotions. The whole thing seems a little elaborate. Yeah. Well, it's what we were saying last week as well, you know, that again, it feels like there's just too many things thrown in there. The Cybermen have no room to breathe. The storylines don't have, there's too many storylines for it to really, for the Cybermen to be anything more than drones, unless that changes next week.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. We've got next week still, and maybe they're not going to go anywhere. I'm not discounting that because, you know, this is Moffat at the helm, and I hate to retread that same old thing I always say, but it's true. But you've got the fact that right now, things seem as they are. But what I like is, and I don't know if we're trying to stay spoiler-free, and that's why you corrected yourself, but I don't think we need to. So you've got the Master in the story, unless, again, something changes in the next story. And the Master, classically, has worked with many aliens, and some of them some big ones before in the past. And, you know, what usually happens is they end up turning on him. And I think... you know, we could be going toward that. The Cybermen could be looking subservient. They could be looking like the Master is their leader right now, and they're pulling a fast one on him. And if that's the way it goes, I'd be okay with that, because that's a classic Master story. But also, I'm interested to see where it goes if it doesn't go there, if it goes kind of nowhere, if they are just kind of the Master's army, which could have been served by anybody, then it kind of is a bit lame. But... You have classic Master plot stuff going on right now. Plot stuff. That's a good technical term for you.
Yes. Okay. So overall opinions on the episode before we get to the end bit. James?
Oh, me first. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good episode. I think there's some interesting questions that could be posed in this podcast about some of the ethics in the episode, so far as the production goes. As a basic overview, yeah, I thought it was really good. I think Clara suffered. They've done this before with companions, and it as soon as you make them so one focused like they did with her, you could say, well, it's very realistic, wouldn't you want to do that? But ultimately, does it just jar the audience? Because, you know, it's not the doctor's fault the guy's died. And as he says, many people died. Why should you take some sort of special preference? And it's because it's my love. And, you know, the audience is, well, I'm not. Danny Pink's not my love. So I'm not really empathizing there particularly. So I think they damaged her again. I think the doctor came off a little weak in that as well. And I think it's strange because this doctor should be able to, when he wants to, dominate her like he did in Listen, you know, when he just told her to get in the TARDIS. And you don't get that. He seems very much like Tennant and Rose, as if sort of slightly under her thumb, and you're thinking, why? So that didn't work for me particularly. But beyond that, I thought it was interesting. The idea was the PR for the episode meant that you pretty much knew what was coming all the way through, which is a shame. They couldn't have held back the Cybermen a little. Because, you know, the water, the dark water, it was obvious what the dark water was going to be hiding. And that was a shame. The Missy stuff, I didn't mind. I know that's got up a lot of people's noses. That doesn't really bother me. It was a bit predictable, again, which is what we were saying, is that you can play these little mysteries in an arc, but ultimately you're never going to reward people because it's either going to be too obscure or too obvious. I kind of feel that Missy could have appeared, say, in Flatline or even the Forest of the Night and kick-started from there, and that would have been fine. You didn't need her in every other episode. So, yeah, but overall, I liked it. I can't really think of anything that was particularly poor. I just found that Clara, I just found her very hard to like. I just don't find her very likable anymore.
Okay. Brian?
I liked the episode. I felt the entire way through I was very interested in it. Nothing was really like pulling me out of it this time, aside from if anything, the doctor's quick choice to go ahead and find Danny wherever he was in this afterlife. You know, the guy was hit by a car and the doctor decides let's try and go save him when he couldn't do that for Adric. Yeah. You know, or anybody else in the past. And
well, maybe
I think
he didn't want to do that for Adric.
Fair enough. No, but what I think might have been a little bit better there, and maybe, again, since it's a two-parter, it's always tough to judge them on just the part one alone. But and so maybe something will happen in the next episode. But maybe if there was something there that made him go, this isn't just a guy getting hit by a car. There's all these telltale signs of the promised land, these things. Like, if there was some hint there that made him think this is connected, I want to look into this and not just, you know, I'm going to do this for my friend when in the past you didn't do it for your friends. You told them it was impossible. So that bugged me a little bit. Again, I did really, I liked the direction of the episode. Again, I liked the story. It seemed like it was going very well. I do agree with James. I think much like series two, when they showed us what the Cybermen looked like on a big BBC splash page on their website, rather than wait for the reveal, it kind of harmed the episode, because just like Rise of the Cybermen, the way who directed that one?
Harper.
Guys? Thank you, Graham Harper. Mm-hmm. Specifically shot that episode to just give you hints and tastes of the Cybermen until the final big reveal, this is what they actually looked like. It harmed his episode when they showed the Cybermen. So knowing that the Cybermen were going to be at the big classic capital shot, like in the invasion, and knowing that they were going to be in this two-parter, really ruined such moments when, you know, obviously we saw the windows with the teardrop and it wasn't hard to figure out that something Cybermen was going on, but it ruined that great moment when Capaldi said he's missing something big and the doors closed and there were the two eyes there. And then, you know, you get the Cybermen theme that's been used in the new series. So aside from those two things, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was very well done. I can understand Clara's grief. I didn't necessarily mind that so much. And getting to the Missy thing, I know you said we'd get to that in a moment, so I guess I'll hold my thoughts on that for now. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next part.
Okay. All right, then, so let's address Missy. Who has claimed to be the master. She probably is the master. It's probably Stephen Moffat seriously head-fucking with Doctor Who fans who have invested large portions of their life in the character of the master, admired him almost as much as they admire the Doctor, and then completely rewritten the character as one of his fundamentals just for the sake of fucking me off personally, I think.
Oh.
Hi, Stephen.
No. Okay, no. Well, that's interesting. Has that really affected you in that way?
Well, it seems pointless. I think that's the main problem. I find it pointless. I find if there was a really good reason for it, like if we were in a scenario where there'd never been any mad Time Lords other than the Master, then I can see it being a good idea. If we lived in a place where there'd never been female Time Lords, it would be different. But if the female Time Lords were villains, we obviously had the Rani, but she wasn't really a villain. And I kind of would have been surprised if she was, if Missy had turned out to be the Rani. And I just want to say, before I continue on this, I think Michelle Gomez is absolutely fantastic. I think she pitched it all perfectly. I don't have a single complaint about her. I do think the characterisation is possibly too similar to the John Sim Master, unfortunately, rather than perhaps another one. But, you know, it was preordained in... which book was it now? It was in The Harvest of Time by Alistair Reynolds, when the Third Doctor and the Delgado Master travel into space to deal with the invasion that's occurring. It's a map. Out of all the Doctor Who books that have been released since 2005, Harvest of Time is probably the best. Written by a proper sci-fi author, and there's some excellent stuff in there. Proper unit-era Doctor Who. Now, what happens is they travel into space and they find that the invaders are in league with future versions of the Master who are all in stasis, and some of them are women. So, you know, from that point of view, I'm not entirely adverse to the idea. But it just seems like, firstly, it was completely obvious that it was... And, you know, Stephen Moffat's done completely obvious before with Impossible Girl and stuff like that. It's gone for that obvious result. Mm-hmm. Sorry, there's someone at my door. I don't know what he wants.
It's Stephen Moffat. He's actually rather upset about what you're saying.
some bald chap. Don't speak to bald people.
Nick Briggs.
No, it's not Nick. No. So the Missy being the Master was quite obvious, and we discussed a little bit of it last week, didn't we? So we did wonder whether it's going to be the Rani or the Master or something completely new. And all these theories have popped up during the week. And one of the most intriguing theories has been the idea that Missy was Clara, from the name of the Doctor's, Gallifreyan Clara, regenerated, gone a bit mad. You've got the Mary Poppins nanny look. And that to me seems a far more intriguing and interesting idea than bringing the Master back as a woman. And Stephen Moffat has said somewhere that they wanted to do something interesting with the Master. If changing gender is the most interesting thing you can do with the Master, don't bother, surely. There's other characters you can use. And double downing on the villains in the finale as well, just... It doesn't, you know, we've seen in Pandorica Opens, although a good adventure overall, the second episode's probably the better episode because there isn't a ton of villains running around, you know? So I'm kind of, that's how I feel about Missy, basically. I think she's good, but I just don't see the point in it, essentially. You are both there, aren't you?
Yes. Making sure you are done. In a way, I agree with you. You know, unless there is a point to it, why do it? Aside from, you know, appeasing all the fans out there that wanted to see it happen. So I'm hoping that the next episode, there's some kind of explanation for it as to why it happened. There's a big Finnish play with Annabella Weir, playing an alternate doctor in the Unbound series. Unbound, and if I remember correctly from that story, it was something that happened when Time Lords committed suicide. They would somehow switch gender. Mm-hmm. And not that I think that they should go down that road in the new series, but they gave an explanation for it rather than it just being normal. And, you know, in my eyes, I'd like to find out why it happened rather than just it's there. It happened. You know, it happened. Like James, I'm kind of at this point, it's been talked about so much for so many years. It was going to happen one day. So whatever it happened, it's here. And she is good. I'm disappointed, kind of like you said, that it's not the Rowney, because she seemed like she would be like, once they got out of that first episode, when she was a little bit silly, which wasn't very Rowney like to me. It started to interest me more in thinking she could have been the Rowney, because I was hoping the whole Missy, Mistress, Master thing that we'd all thought of ever since the character was announced was too obvious that he was hopefully using it to hide behind, rather than actually being so obvious. Classic Moffat means that it's actually true. I was hoping for something like that. I was hoping, because I don't know. To me, you bring your first major female Time Lord character into the series, and then a new series. And instead of going with one that already exists or even creating one, you take a character that was generally played by a male and make them female.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And my whole friend base out there, they seem to like the idea. But to me, it's kind of like saying, you know, the female characters weren't really that interesting. Let's go ahead and make one of these male ones in the female. There you go. Now it's interesting. And that's the part that bugs me. You know, but, you know, she was good. She did a good job. I liked her in the story. I'm really interested to see where it goes. I just want to see an explanation as to why it happened rather than this is just normal for them.
My issue is I think you're both wrong. I think it was I think there is legitimacy in doing this, because from what
is
I could
this,
see...
Is this a genuine opposing view, or is this just one that you've just made up a few minutes ago just to make the podcast interesting, which you are known to do from time to time?
Well, you'll just have to decide for yourself.
Okay.
I mean, as played in the episode, the thing which seemed to shock the genitals of most Doctor Who fans, what little genitals they may have, I don't know, I've not looked, was the idea that they kissed, being that it's the Master. And yeah. For me, I wonder perhaps what was the dramatic impetus of this wasn't so much to as much as the surprise reveal, but was what would happen if you had two characters which were so very closely bound to an almost like Cain and Abel sort of brotherly love hate. What if one of them was suddenly a woman? How would that affect that dynamic? How would that change their situation? How would there be an attraction there? As I think I've said on our Facebook writing thing, you know, there was that line in Time Crash about the Master's beard as a joke, obviously written by Stephen Moffat, suggesting a homosexual tendency there from Moffat's point of view. Is there an idea that, you know, as a girl, he does genuinely find the Doctor attractive?
Well, but doesn't that just like insult every homosexual as well?
I am not saying that what I'm trying to say is that whether you actually agree with it as an ethical point of view or whether you agree with it as a narrative point of view, I just think that a character point of view rather than narrative, I think that's possibly where they see the interest. I think that is where they see the reason in doing it is that you're playing the same dynamic that would usually be between the same gender, and you're in a rare position in a TV show beyond one-off episodes of Star Trek to sort of swap it round and actually have one of them as a different gender and see how that plays off. And I wonder if that is the actual artistic reason for doing it. I think there's obviously the surprise factor. Won't it shock people if suddenly it's all, you know, it's a woman? It's as I think we had in the Casterbus review, the term, it's a game changer. I'm not entirely sure it is yet. It depends how they play part two.
Well, you know, there's a rumor that Seb is actually the Master.
Yeah,
I was wondering where they were going with that character myself. I don't. Sorry, James.
Possibly instead, possibly as well.
I think it's a bit of wishful thinking. Mm. I have a horrible feeling this is going to be simpler than people realize. I think other writers might, you know, if you were really trying to play with people a bit here, you'd probably have in part two, you find out it's not the master. It could be the Rani. And she's just, you know, head messing, he says, trying to limit the swear words in this podcast. oh, what the hell? Head fucking him. Yeah. You don't know. I mean, maybe it's that way. But I have a feeling that he wants this as the master. I have a feeling this is his game changer, because Stephen Moffat likes to put his mark on the show, doesn't he? That's very much.
Does he? I've never noticed.
Exactly. I mean, it's up to you whether you think that's a good mark or not, but he does like to affect continuity.
It's like a cat, isn't he?
But it's a shame, because, you know, Doctor Who, you know, probably would be better off, especially now after so many years of arcs, just doing as he once said he was perhaps going to try and do one-offs and just do them as individual stories. And stop trying to change the future and just enjoy the present. But he just doesn't seem to be able to do that.
You know, I was actually wondering if, rather than Seb being the master, if Seb wasn't also the master.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if like both of them are, and somehow the character was split rather than two future versions or something.
Well, it is a matrix, effectively, as Christian pointed out earlier. So there's no reason why that just can't be an extension of the master within the matrix. So
that's true. That's a good point. I think too, one other thing that's needs to be brought up is, why did the Doctor not recognize her as the master?
Yes,
according to the Doctor, he can do that, unless you know, the master is somehow masking it, like he did not with Utopia, because that he was a completely different being in a human form. It was Saxon
on Earth, and Saxon,
exactly, he never felt his presence. So why didn't he get it?
What's about Time Flight, where he wore a disguise? Maybe the hat is part of one of the Anthony Ainley like disguises, and it totally throws
it off. That's what I was going to say. If it is the master in disguise. You know, I mean, I get what you're saying, being silly with the hat, but
but it could be, because
I mean, to me, it's kind of like,
you mean when she takes her hat off, she's got a beard.
Well, when she takes her hat off, he'll see the master, because the disguise is gone.
Well, here's the thing, though. You got the disguise. I mean, pretty much this woman is Mary Poppins. You know, from day one of her photo hitting the net, she was Mary Poppins. She looks like just an angry, kind of evil version of Mary Poppins. Maybe there is a disguise at play there. Maybe it's something meant to throw things off, because the master's always had a very specific style before, but he never went ahead and stole like some happy-go-lucky character from a movie.
As disguises go, it's up there with standing in a field dressed as a scarecrow, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
There is one other point this episode I wanted to bring up, was something actually one of my family said, and I think it's worth talking about. Well, they said it more abstract. I'm actually creating an argument out of it. It seems to me an amazing bit of social hypocrisy that, you know, in Robin of Sherwood, we have to have a cut because there is a decapitation which is pertinent to topical news events.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in this episode, you have the suggestion that when people die, or at least, you know, in this fictional version, but, you know, you take it as a potential allegory for death, when people die, they can still feel the sensation of their body.
Yeah.
Now, if you've had a lost one that's just been lost, or your terminal yourself, this is my point.
People have than have perhaps known someone who's been beheaded.
Exactly. This, you know, you can see where I'm going with this. Is there not sort of like almost like an ethical hypocrisy here? Because that, if you're worried about traumatizing potential viewers because of topical events, surely there can be nothing more topical than losing a loved one, or even being terminal yourself. And then having a story, especially with kids watching as well, which sort of suggests that when you die, you feel your body in whatever state it's in.
Yeah.
And that is quite horrendous. It's a wonderful science fiction. But for a TV show, is there a question of, you know, how you can justify cutting such a silly scene in Robin of Sherwood for a limited topical event, and yet you let this run with its emotional impact for a family show? I don't know.
Yeah, and well, also you have showing Danny in wartime. You know, plenty of people lost people over in wartime. Plenty of people in that area have lost people, you know, through that horrible tragedy. So that's just another thing to compound on there that we're showing, because that's something, you know, that's something Doctor Who never really has shown. You know, we've even when we've gone to the wars, say like in the War Games, it was never really shown as true as it could have been. You know, even when we thought we were going to get something like that with Let's Kill Hitler, we got something completely different. Mm. You know, it's something that they've generally strayed away from. Now, I think it's important for the character. And you know, that's one thing I do want to point out with this episode. I really like Danny. And I do think he's a very good character. I think he's a very well-acted character. And it is a shame that he seems this whole season, this whole series, to be kind of a sideline character for Clara, because he's a great character. And I liked the way he played it. I liked the way that he kind of made his choice, you know, Clara, don't follow me, and, you know, did whatever he could to get her to not believe that he was really him, this way she wouldn't go. I liked all of that kind of stuff. So it is kind of necessary to understand where he comes from and why he is the way he is. So it was good, but it was one of those things, again, like that stuff, if you'd lost somebody recently or period, would be upsetting.
It was just, it's an interesting question, isn't it, is how far a family show can go, or even just maybe the question is how far did they not, they shouldn't have gone with Robin or Sherwood if they're willing to show something like this, which is just as emotionally impacting. But yeah, I thought it was a great science fiction idea. That's, you know, that being said, I thought it was well played. I think I agree with you. I think Danny was wonderfully handled. I thought the actor played him very well. I thought the story, his, you know, his background, was pretty good. It was pretty harsh. It reminds me of another show. I'm trying to think what it is that I've seen with this very similar thing, with a similar sort of his Neighbours. Yeah, Neighbours just did a very similar storyline of a character who's came back from the war, and he was dealing with the trauma of giving a kid a toy who, when the kid takes it home, he is killed for having a Westerner's toy. And it's a sort of very similar similar sort of vibe on both family shows. It's interesting how they're able to go there these days, and it's not considered uncomfortable things. Yeah, but apart from that, I think it's been a good it looks like it's a good bookend for the series, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's certainly engaging. It's better than, personally, I think it's far better than what we saw in Forest of the Night or The Caretaker or that terrible one. What was it? The Moon. Let's
kill the Moon. Well, let's balance things out, because I don't want people sort of commenting. Well, I mean, they can comment what they fucking
negative.
Like. Okay. Oh, you didn't like it, you negative bunch of bastards, yeah. Doctor Who fans. If you like Doctor Who, why are you watching it?
I love that one. Isn't that great? Yeah. Why don't we just actually... We could just burn all the books by academics in our libraries and repositories, because, you know, they criticize shows they might have interest in. You know, we've all just got to adulate every bit of every show.
Yes. So max out of 10 for Dark Water.
Hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give it 8, because I've just given it 8 on the .2 consumer panel.
Okay. What are you giving it, Brian?
I'm not
supposed to say that. I think it's supposed to be confidential.
No, you'll just have to bleep out what you give it. I know, because you've already said that's what you're giving it here. So you'll have to bleep out what you're giving it here as well.
This is tough for me. I don't like to rate part one. You know, I like to the stories are
pretend
as a whole.
Part two.
What's that? Pretend it's part two. No, I mean, you're sounding distant, Christian, by the way. So come closer to your microphone. You're fading into the light.
Is this better?
There you are, much better, yes. Well, it's tough, because I always view them as if we're viewing a classic story. You know, I wouldn't rate Genesis of the Daleks on part one of Genesis of the Daleks. You know, just because the episodes have different names doesn't mean that they are separate episodes. They're connected. They're part one and part two. So it was very good. I'm reluctant to give it a number now. I'd much rather give the whole story a number next podcast, to be honest.
But you could still give it based on its... Because it's still a form in itself. It's still... This is a product which is part of a story, but you can still judge it from within the context of it as a single thing, because it has an intent. If you see what I mean, you don't have to judge
it. End. You know,
but it does.
It doesn't have an end. Oh, no, it doesn't have an end.
Well, it does. It's like saying you can't judge Star Wars because you've not seen Empire Strikes Back. It's still a contained thing, even if it's continued on later, if you see what I mean. So you could still judge
You might have
judge
done
it.
Better with that argument if you said Empire Strikes Back without seeing Jedi. Because Star Wars does have an end. But,
oh, God, don't.
Just no, you can't. Listen, it's tough because there isn't an end to the story. A battle is about to happen. The humans are about to be invaded. The Doctor just found out who the Master was, and they haven't resolved the storyline. So, yeah, I mean, I can't. I enjoyed it. That's what I will say. And if next time it's not enjoyable, if the payoff is awful, it does impact the first part of the story because there are unresolved things, plenty of them within the story. And if I'm going to rate this and say, hey, this was great, and then next week they're going to just crap all over all of that, yeah, I don't want to rate it based on
that's
this.
Fair,
but that's fine. But there's nothing wrong with re-rating. No one has to say that what you think now is going to be the same next week. You can't see the future. But you can judge on the present. I mean, I'm rating it. I will rate it. This rate, I'll rate it 8.5. The Clara thing spoilt it for me. But other than that, I thought it was very good. But I'm very happy next week to knock it down to 6 if I find out what comes.
So next time, instead of re-rating it, you'll berate it.
I could berate it. Yeah, very good. Yeah. I like that. Very good.
Yeah, no, you see, I think you guys both went with 8 simply because this is series 8.
Well, I was actually going with 9, but I thought that was really against my character to sort of rate so highly.
Have you been taken over by...
Well, that's it. But I did genuinely enjoy it. As I say, the Master thing hasn't bothered me yet. I guess because I was almost expecting it. So that didn't bother me. The only thing that sort of bothered me was the Cybermen again were diluted. And as I say, I thought Clara was, a bit like Rose, getting just a bit big for the boots. And the Time Lord just sort of... I kind of wish, you know, when he tells her to go to hell, I would have rather... There's a line in Star Trek 6, isn't there, where Kirk at the beginning, where Spock says about the Klingon race, he says, you know, Jim, they're dying. And Kirk says, let them die. And then he stops and rethinks it and then comes up with another point because he automatically realizes it's the wrong thing to say. I'd have rather had the Capaldi Doctor say, go to hell, let her almost walk out and then, retract it personally and then go, right, I'll help you. Because it just gives him a little bit more standing, you know, because she was utterly going to screw him over. And he could then still say his line that, you know, I would do anything for you, because it would still be justified. But without that little emotional outburst, he sort of loses a bit. Do you see what I mean? So yeah, 8.5 still.
Okay. Well, that was it was a fun episode. There's lots going on there, and we await the finale. Death in Heaven, an intriguing name already, on Saturday night at the earlier time of 8 o'clock. It's a 60-minute episode this week, gentlemen.
Oh. That means more time for Danny Pink and Clara, I imagine. Oh, good.
Hey, let's have a look at what the viewers, listeners, Casterbrites specifically, voted in our Dark Water poll on Saturday night. The poll closed yesterday. I would say there's 140 comments on this particular thread, which is, if it's not a record, it's very close to being one. What did you think of Dark Water? 61.13%. Superb! Got me fired up for the final episode. And 14.84%. Good stuff. Nice to see Moffat on form at last. So that's around 75-76%. Not as high as the episode a couple of weeks ago, whose name escapes me at the moment. Please help.
Into the Forest of the Night?
No,
oh, Murder on the Orient Express? Mummy on the Orient...
No, Flatline.
Flatline, no.
Flatline, which got something like 88%, which is the most we've ever had. For the two positive answers combined. So just 10%, Stephen Moffat, it's time to go, not good enough, and too much going on, an opportunity missed, just 0.82%. And 13.19% think the same as Brian. Was okay, I'll decide when I've seen Death in Heaven.
So, I mean, because I see that from my readings, a lot of people seem to have a lot of issue with, like you two are saying about the Master. That seemed to really stick in a lot of people's craw. Do you think people are also worried because it sort of creates a sort of almost precedent to try and do a female doctor? And do you think there's a bit of that there as well, that it you know, you feel you're being forced down a path unnecessarily, which could lead to something else, which a lot of people feel equally is unnecessary?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. I don't think it's wholly about that.
No, I wouldn't say it's wholly. I wouldn't suggest.
I think this is, you know, there's a lot of people say, oh, well, you must be homophobic. You must be, which is possibly not what anyone said, but it's usually what people say anyway. You must be misogynist. You must be sexist, or you must be sort of anti cross gender transitioning or whatever, transgender. if you don't think it's a good idea, and it's like, these aren't real. These are characters that have born and been developed over many years. And there's an investment in the character, but there's also facets to these characters. And just by flipping a gender like that, it just seems a very easy thing to do without thinking it through properly. And I know, you know, no one in the classic series, perhaps, particularly, no one gave a damn about what might happen to a particular character a couple of years down the line. But at the same time, in the classic series, very few characters were really developed, particularly, either, in terms of companions and villains.
Very true.
So, it just seems like a very easy thing to do, and a very obvious thing to do. It just frustrates me that people who are held in high esteem, clever friends in Cardiff, would just, you know, take such an easy route into the story. But, you know, we haven't seen the second part yet. There might be a lot more to it. And, you know, at the same time, okay, when did the Doctor abandon the Master exactly?
Exactly.
When did this happen?
I meant to bring that up, right.
When did this happen? Because we've seen everything the Doctor's done, apart from, you know, when he's had his moody bits. We've seen everything the Doctor's done since the end of time. He hasn't encountered the Master in that time, and he definitely didn't abandon the Master in the end of time, because the Master was nowhere to be seen.
And the Master sacrificed himself for
exactly.
the Doctor.
Yeah, well, so there's no abandonment there.
Maybe the Master kind of feels that he was expecting the Doctor to come and get him out of wherever he ended up. Maybe he feels abandoned in that sort of sense.
Which did make me wonder whether she's a different version of the Master. Obviously, she's a different version of the Master, but from a different point in the Master's timeline.
Yeah, at the same time, when she said you abandoned me, I did wonder whether that was a reference to being left in the void or wherever she ended up.
Yeah.
Being, you know, the Master is very self-focused.
Yes.
And like a lot of self-focused people are, but even at the time, they might have had a different feeling. At the time, they might have been quite happy sacrificing themselves. 300 years stuck in a white void. Suddenly, they start thinking, that other person could have helped me, you know, could have sort of grabbed me and pulled me back or something. It could be that sort of factor to it.
I don't know.
It could also be something that we'll learn more about next time, stemming to an event that we're unaware of. You know, something from their childhood history, even.
Well, there's also the fact of the equipment she was using. I mean, another question is, I was wondering whether St. Paul's was a TARDIS.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
It's
not.
Yeah, because it just seemed to be very... and it would also help with the whole Matrix thing.
Yeah, yeah. Which isn't the Matrix. Someone said, how has he got the Matrix from Gallifrey? But it's not the Matrix. It's a Matrix slice.
No, it's... Yes.
Yeah. It's in the script. So. The thing as well, she said that bit about the abandoned. She says that when the Doctor still thinks she's a she. Obviously, she is a she, but, you know, that he thinks that she's a Time Lady, the Time Lady that you abandoned. And, you know, there are other Time Ladies that the Doctor has possibly abandoned over the years, such as Susan and Romana, which is kind of Moffat playing little games with us with dialogue that doesn't actually mean anything.
Well, we'll just have to see how they play that out. I mean,
Brian, sorry.
Sorry? Oh. You know... No idea. I've lost it. Sorry.
Hey! Oh!
Hey! Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Ah! We have a time tot in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
I hope you're... you're going to punish?
No, hang on, hang on. Come up here.
Punish.
Say hello.
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 Bruce, do you like Doctor Who? What do you say?
Okay.
No, do you like Doctor Who?
Yeah.
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 What do you like about Doctor Who?
That one.
That one?
Yeah.
You like that Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Do you like that one there?
Yeah.
Do you like that one?
Yeah.
Do you like that one?
But he can't talk.
He can't talk?
No.
No, he can't talk. No, he's just a toy.
Okay. And that Doctor Who can't talk either.
No, he can't talk either, no. Who's this? Do you remember what this lady's name is?
Rose.
Rose, that's right.
Wow. See, this is the problem. When I'm on a date and my conversation is as scintillating, the girl walks out.
No, don't take her hair off. No, it does look like it.
Yeah, no, no, do take Rose's hair off. Now pull off her head.
Brian, I've got the a Series 2 Rose in the purple tunic.
Okay.
And her hair looks like it comes off. Is yours the same?
Yeah, I think they made the hair as like a separate kind of like rubber mold.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Brian's just tried to pull it off. Bruce has just tried to pull it off. Listen, are you going to go downstairs to Mummy? I'll be down in a minute.
No, I won't hold that doctor.
You want to hold that doctor?
Yeah.
You want to hold... he's holding the fifth doctor now. The one of those little... who's those Titan miniatures. Do you want to take it downstairs and show Erin?
Yeah.
It's so cool to have a dad who's into Doctor Who.
He hasn't, no. Okay, I'll be down in a minute. You go and show Mummy what you've got. Ah, so, ladies and gentlemen, should we leave that in?
Yeah, you can do. I was just thinking, we didn't really talk about Seb much, but Chris Addison was very good, wasn't he?
He was good, yeah. Yeah, he was, yeah.
Do you think one thing that me and my friend Karen are hoping for is that we will have another, because the sheriff from Robin of Sherwood's character will be possibly uploaded into the Matrix, that he may take the form of the Master at the very end in a sort of like a Tremas way.
Oh, don't get me excited.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes, it would.
And he would become, because he'd be so Anthony Ainley. And he's already lied. When he spoke to me and said that, I know he spoke and he said this in front of everyone, that Moffat didn't have any interest in redoing the Master.
How did he lie?
Well, he said to a whole group of people that Moffat, this series, Moffat had no interest in doing the Master because he's too much like Moriarty.
Oh, right, I see where you're getting, from.
Yeah, and then lo and behold, at the end of the series, no one is surprised when, wayho, it's the Master.
I wonder if that's what we're going to see next week, then. I wonder if we're going to see various people from throughout the season.
It would make sense.
Yes.
But we are, yeah.
In a way, I hope that's what we get to see, because, I mean, we understand that all of those people now were being collected in this Matrix slice, and I get that, but I still kind of, in a way, would like to see these people or somehow find out. Kind of like that scene in Rise of the Cybermen, or the second part, Age of Steel, when they found that woman who was going to be on her wedding day, but now she was a Cyberman, and somehow she was able to, you know, the emotional chip was damaged or whatever, and she was able to speak to them, and you got to see who this real person was under the suit. I would like in some way to find these people, or at least a handful of them, to make those scenes kind of feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
To me. And I think if they had done a similar scene with Danny, where maybe Danny had died because of an adventure that he stepped in on with Clara and the doctor, and that led the doctor to think something else is going on here, like something about that, maybe the Promised Land was mentioned or something, it would have made all those scenes work alone. But since we didn't get that yet, either we get that in the next story or we get to see these characters. It's just, those scenes, they don't feel necessary for the story that you're telling right now, I guess, is my point.
I agree. Yeah, I think we should be seeing some. It does raise the what James has just said as well. Just does raise the question as to whether or not Missy is some sort of avatar as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, my other problem is I don't. this is what they've got to explain next week, is how, I mean, because you just remind me, or I've just reminded myself that, you know, she was pillaging through time as well. So assuming she's getting consciousnesses that then delete their emotions, but surely, I know she says the one thing that humanity has, which is the amount of dead outweigh the amount of living, but you've only got a finite amount of resources, surely, to build Cybermen.
But, you know, we had
why?
Those moments.
I still don't quite understand why.
You've only got a finite number of dead bodies as well.
Well, that's it. But that's what I mean. She's taking people from out of time, like in Deep Breath was the one I was thinking of. So it's not just contemporary people that are being killed and put into this. We're talking about souls or minds being collected from
into the Dalek
different
as well.
Time streams, surely.
Which Into the Dalek, at least if it shows us anything, the Master isn't just back and has a Matrix slice, but has a TARDIS again. Because the way that Journey Blue was brought into the TARDIS, and at the same way that, I think it was in the same episode, if not it was another episode, where one of the dead bodies appeared in heaven, quotation marks there, was the same effect, which showed that these people were picked up by the TARDIS, in a way. At least to me, it feels that way. You know? So, well, which, because my thing is Danny Pink, the actor who plays him anyway, mentioned that he would like to come back for series 9.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Doctor and Clara are going to save him. You're going to have the happy feel good ending because he feels his character is viable for coming back. So, these people can be saved somehow. So, were they really dead? Or was there some kind of swap or something going on?
Brings me back to the Avatar thing.
Yeah.
As well. Hmm. And also, it could be misconstrued that the slice, the Matrix slice, is just a consciousness, just a hard drive. But I think it's more to it than that. I think there are people walking around in there. I think it's TARDIS technology. It's bigger on the inside.
Yeah.
Shall we do recommendations, chaps? Oh, before we do anything, I just want to double check. You're L.I. Who next weekend, aren't you?
It's this weekend.
Yeah, this coming weekend is what.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll talk about that next week?
Yes.
As well as everything else?
Right.
Might be a bumper podcast next week.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, okay. So recommendations. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Go on, then.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to say on my recommendation last week with Inspector Morse, I want to say I've already recommended it, so I'm not going to go there again. But it's sort of like a kind of a who's who of all the major kind of sci-fi or pop culture franchises right now. I'm looking at all like different actors from the Marvel movies and the current series of Doctor Who and classic series of Doctor Who. And a few other franchises out there. Even one guy from Star Trek Enterprise was in one of these episodes. So it's quite weird to be watching these episodes and looking at a bunch of faces and going, I know that person. And then you figure it out. And it's from these things that you watch quite often, except for Enterprise. I don't watch that. I just know the actor. But anyway, yes, I wanted to put that on there. There's just tons of familiar faces in this show, which I love. I love looking at things like that and seeing who these people are.
And what show was it again?
Inspector Morse.
So how far through are you now?
I think I'm like at the end of season 6 now.
Okay.
Netflix put on, I think, up to season 8, and I had already watched a couple.
Is it 12 in total?
So. Well, I don't know how many there are. Oh, yes, actually, you're right. There are 12.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But my recommendation, I actually went back recently to listen to some Paul McGann Big Finish radio dramas. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of Charlie, as I recommended the other week, the Charlotte Pollard series.
Yeah.
So I wanted to hear some more of her stories. But I was kind of more interested in Doctor Who before the new series came back. Because at that time, Paul McGann was still the current Doctor. And that's how he was being touted at Big Finish. And that's how they were treating his stories. And they did this storyline where they basically trapped the Doctor in an alternate kind of universe, a universe without time. And even though they kind of had acknowledged the passage of time, they didn't have the concept of it. They didn't have a word for it. And I found it interesting. So I wanted to listen to that storyline again. So I was listening to those stories all the way up through when they decided to end that storyline, which was when the new series came back. And they realized, because in this story, I should say, the Doctor's been trapped without his TARDIS. So they realized new fans are going to come back and want to check out these stories. And if they see that Paul doesn't have the TARDIS, they'd be lost and confused. So they ended that storyline. But it's really quite a good storyline. It introduces Karras, who is an interesting character. Some people found him bland, I guess. I don't know. I liked him. I thought he was interesting, especially when you get to the end and find out why he may possibly be a little bland. I liked the idea of that world, that reality. It kind of gave me a feel of season 12 with Tom Baker, where you're taken from adventure to adventure through different means rather than the usual TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that aspect. But it's a really good story. The last one I just listened to was the final one, The Next Life, which really does a good job of wrapping everything up and explaining everything, why the Doctor was there, which you find out when you hear it. That's kind of connected to the story prior to it, prior to this story arc, rather, which I think lasted for two or three seasons with Big Finish. But it was a lot better than I remembered it being. When I first heard it, I remembered it being good, but I remembered the whole time going, okay, can we get back to reality? Can we get the TARDIS back? But this time round, I really enjoyed the fact that they didn't have the TARDIS, that they were working toward a goal, that this reality without time was affecting the Doctor so poorly. As he put it, it was like having one of your senses taken away, like lopping off an arm. You know, with him not being able to feel time, it was very harmful to him.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I would recommend. It started with Zagreus, which was the lead-in story into this, and then it ended with The Next Life. I would recommend that arc with the Paul McGann plays, because it really was a very interesting idea.
Okay. They took the Doctor's TARDIS off him in the BBC books as well. They following the events in the Ancestor Cell by Peter Angelides and Steve Cole, the TARDIS was left more or less destroyed, and it had a 100-year regeneration to regenerate. So that left the Doctor on Earth through the burning casualties of war, the Turing test, Endgame, Father Time, and then escape velocity when he finally gets into a working TARDIS. Some good stories in there as well. Father Time's particularly good.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and they're a strong run of books, actually. Quite dark as well. Okay, James, do you have a recommendation this week?
Following on from talking about Neighbours, I'm going to recommend, while it's still on YouTube.
You did say, I think I'm right in saying that you actually did suggest Neighbours as a recommendation recently.
Well, this isn't Neighbours.
Good.
This is Neighbours versus Zombies.
Oh, Christ.
if you pop onto YouTube, there's five parts of Neighbours versus Zombies, and it's basically the Neighbours set in a slightly alternate universe where a load of their dead characters from the history come back as zombies and start attacking them. And it's just beautifully put together for a five-part YouTuber. The actual cinematography is better in that than it is in the show, which I think is a worrying truth. And it's great fun. If you ever watched Neighbours over the past, I don't know, 20 years, there's probably something in it for you. Well, I'm saying the characters that come back, I would say probably in the last 20-year period or so. Okay. So that's a sort of a good time frame. It's a laugh. It's very interesting to see a soap take itself so lightly and put production time into something so silly. So I think from a TV point of view, it's quite an interesting experiment. And I've not seen any other soaps do something so stupid. So it's brilliant. It's a brilliant laugh. I would recommend watching that. Yes, I could have recommended some films I've watched, or I could recommend you not to be too excited or bother with Gotham. That's up to you, you know. But Neighbours versus Zombies was just something which just blew my mind when I heard about it. It's like, what? Why? Who put money into this? Why put money into it? They've got old cast members back. Why? It just floored me. So.
Is it something that you need to have seen Neighbours before to really appreciate?
I think you'll get a lot more out of it if you know
Kylie in it.
Characters come back. No, sadly there isn't. But Stingray appears, who's a character who died from leukemia. Harold Bishop's son is in there, and it is actually quite beautifully put together. It's a bit of a laugh. Yeah, if you're not into Neighbours, you probably won't get much out of it because you don't know the characters. But it's like I say, as a TV cultural event, it's quite an interesting step to have made, because the production does look so good. I recommend that to juxtapose your recommendations of quality.
I have two recommendations. Neither of them are one's visual, and they both involve using your eyes, but they're unusual recommendations. My first recommendation is Sean Pertwee's Instagram photo.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yes, yes.
In which he's dressed as the Third Doctor, which is an absolutely marvellous photo. And especially the way that he's holding his phone, or was it an iPhone, I'm not sure, in an almost sonic screwdriver by the Third Doctor kind of a way. But then again, maybe that's the only way you can take a selfie in front of a mirror. And why was he taking a selfie in front of a mirror?
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe for the full pose. Anyway, it's a very good photo, so you should see it. It'll probably be appearing in the show notes on castobus.com. And my other recommendation is less a experience. Well, it is an experience as well, but it is not. It's basically create your own experience, ladies and gentlemen. Dear listener, I'm engaged for reasons of stupidity and madness, and you might like to be as well, in this year's NaNoWriMo competition. I say competition, you don't actually win anything. In which the aim is to write a novel of 50,000 words minimum through the month of November. Partially the reason I say this is if I tell you that I'm doing this, then I've screwed myself into being able to quit. Basically, I can't do it because now, 3,000 people know that I'm doing it and I have to have something finished at the end. So you can go to nanorimo.org and sign up yourself and start writing. And it's an exercise. It's not, you're going to have a finished story, but it's an exercise. It's going to be a draft. It's not going to be the finished novel, obviously. But it's an exercise in writing and discipline and writing X amount of words every day. And if you're writing daily, then that would be 1,666. Ish, I think. So that's my recommendation. It's not to watch or read, it's to write, basically. And it's what I'm going to be doing for the next remainder of this month, and it might also be my recommendation for the following weeks. Depends. Okay. Anyone, anything to add to this week's Castobus podcast with a kicking car?
No.
Okay.
No.
Glad we're so definitive on that.
I will say Sunday, and the sad thing is I probably need to get you guys a bit more information for this, but on Sunday there will be a live podcast from L.I. Who, not for Kisterberg's podcast with a K, but for the organizers of the event. And in that, I am going to be 20 minutes of that live podcast interviewing Colin Baker. So right. I will get you guys more information. It goes out live on Sunday. I'm sure since it's a podcast, it'll be able to be downloaded again later. But if you're interested in hearing it, it'll happen on Sunday.
Do you know, I've always wondered why we've never been invited to podcast at an event. And then I listened to the podcast and realized why. No. so you know, James and I might be available to podcast if you to ask us nicely and arrange something that we can both get to without being loads of traveling crap in the way that we have to put up with. That's fair enough, isn't it, James?
Yes.
That brings us to the end of this week's Castobus podcast with a K. I'll just adopt my radio voice once more. Thank you for listening, dear listener, and we'll be back next time. Cue the music.
James, that's where you're supposed to do the backing vocals.